The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and today I am speaking with Malcolm Welfare on the electric drum. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
All right. So where are you from?
I'm from New Haven. I'm right here in New Haven.
Okay. Yeah. Where, I mean, did you grow up in a specific area? Did you move around?
Moved around a little bit. Started out in the Hill, grew up in the Hill for most of my life. Well, I'm 38 now, so... Till I was 13, then I moved over to Westville. Been there ever since. So New Haven.
Mom and dad?
Mom and dad.
What are their names?
Both educators, Harry and Tish Welfare.
Okay.
Harry and Harriet Welfare. So that's always a funny one because they have the same initials. So, they're both educators, New Haven educators, migrated here from the South and got their education here. And then they had me and my sister, Maya. Maya Welfare, and they stayed here, and we grew up here.
Oh, they're educators. What was the household like growing up? Was it full of, you know, books, education first?
Absolutely, and it still is. That's the way we raise my daughters as well. House is full of books, words everywhere. I wasn't allowed to go outside until I finished my work, which I hate it, but now I really appreciate. And it's funny now that I try to instill some of those discipline and regimen things and they're like, no, let him go, let it go. And I'm just like, that's how you raised me. So, you know, grandparents are funny that way. But yes, lots of love, lots of laughter, but also, yes, lots of learning, lots of discipline. We always went on adventures, went on trips, went out places. And that is what really influences me today to try to go and see and do and bring experiences back and make experiences for myself and my family and other people as well.
Tell me a little bit about Harry. How was Harry growing up?
Oh, man, Harry is hilarious. Harry, he's a jokester, military guy, but he is hilarious. He's a medic, was a military medic, retired. He did over 28 years in the military, 38 years in the school system, retired as an assistant principal from troop school. So he always made sure that fun was in the learning. So it's kind of like the counterbalance to mom, who was just like, you know, making sure that we crossed our I's, dotted our T's. But he made it relaxed, made it fun, always cracked a joke when things got tense with the learning or the just in the house in general. He's definitely a great leader. One of his mentors is Mr. James Barber. So he's... one of our community New Haven legends, leads a lot of different things, was a longtime Southern administrator in Southern. And he worked with him to establish a bunch of different mentoring programs. So that's where I get a lot of my outreach fire from Harry. He's a go-getter.
Growing up, you got a good story growing up with Harry. One time that Harry taught you a good old lesson, the hard way or the...
Yeah, one time I was in, we had this blue Datsun. It was in the backyard, and we were playing in the car, shifting the gears. I was shifting the gears, and then the car went in the gear. It wasn't on, but it went in the gear and it started rolling. So I jumped out the car. It was about three or four of us in the neighborhood, Kimberly Avenue. We're pushing the car back. It was working for a little hot second, and then the momentum took the car, so we all got out of the way. The car rolled into the garage, and I was like, oh, man, we broke the door to the garage. This is crazy. So I had to go in and tell Dad. And he looked at me for a second. He was like, is everything all right? Anybody get hurt? I was like, no. And he was like, and then he started laughing. And his eyes just so scared. I was just looking at him like, oh my gosh. I didn't know if I had caused damage to the car. I knew I broke the garage door. But he came outside. He looked. He started laughing again. He was like, all right, y'all, don't do this anymore. And he was like, make sure you stay out of the car and don't play with the gear. But he just, he kind of made it light. And we went back to playing. And I was just kind of like, oh, man, this is, that was crazy. So I'll never forget that moment. Me and my sister still laugh about that.
Sometimes the scare is the lesson itself.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. Woo, that was a good one. But yeah, all kinds of lessons and wisdom from Harry. His father was also in our lives early on before. He died when I was about 9 years old. And so that Southern South Carolina Geechee upbringing and, you know, lessons about life and making sure you're listening and getting your lesson and brushing your pegs, brushing your teeth, you know, all, you know, trickled down. So I was grateful to have that lineage.
Geechee.
Yeah, yeah. Gullah Geechee.
Gullah Geechee, that's a tribe?
That is a culture in Southern America that is a mix of both freed and native, escaped and free black people. So people who had escaped slavery and those who were, you know, just native to the land. And so there was a mixing of the African culture plus the Native American culture. So, and the reason why the culture is still able to be around today is because the preservation and the way that the natives knew the land, they were able to survive in different ways to preserve the culture.
Many of them were given a choice to either move to the territory, Oklahoma, Trail of Tears, or be enslaved.
Correct.
And a majority of people decided to actually stay and become enslaved, especially men.
Mm-hmm. And then later fought in the Gullah Geechee War, that was part of the Revolutionary War. So it's very important history that we have there with the Gullah Geechee people and their influence on American history.
Thank you for being in tune with your past. Let's talk a little bit about Harriet.
Harriet, mom, oh man, she is a go-getter as well. She was part of the integration movement in North Carolina growing up. She integrated her high school. She and her mom was also a beautiful human being. Made sure we knew our lineage. She knew her father. We met her grandfather. So it was my great-great-grandfather. And he worked on things like the George Washington Bridge and just amazing. Rode a bike everywhere until he was 93 years old. And then he died around that time. So just, you know, mom is a true matriarch. She makes sure that we stay healthy, that we have the knowledge and the holistic knowledge to stay functioning, that we're taking our vitamins. You know, she was early on the holistic wave before it really got popular. So like in the early 90s, trying to get my grandmother to eat right and get off the Southern foods, and trying to get my dad to eat right and stay off the Southern foods. Cause he was dad was one of 12. So all the cooking, and he's the youngest boy. So all the cooking and all the family gatherings, and mom really made sure that we stayed on track and we stayed right, not only with the academics and the, you know, making sure we did our writing. She was a speech pathologist. So dad was assistant principal. Mom was a speech pathologist in the school system. And she retired with over 32 years in the system of New Haven Public Schools. So just really bringing her clinical knowledge, her undergrad knowledge, graduate school knowledge. That's where my parents met, here at grad school at Southern Connecticut State University. And she really makes sure that we are out there moving and shaking. She was responsible for making sure that we had some of the first magnet schools here in the city of New Haven, starting with Edgewood Magnet School. It was the first arts school in the city, first our first magnet pilot in the city, making sure that we had facilities at the school, playgrounds, things like that, and just really watching her do that. And even as we got older, working on the mayoral campaign for Honorable Mayor Tony Harp, working on the fighting to keep the mailboxes open so that way we have mail delivery services and those type of things really inspired me and just kept me invigorated and just normalized just, you know, all the things that I uphold in my life and do in my life. So Mom is a big inspiration. She's a sweet woman. Everybody who meets her ends up walking away, oh man, your mom, she's such a joy. She's such a light to talk to, and she really is. Like, she'll be able to give people advice in ways I'm just like, Mom, like, why? And they're like, no, tell me more. I want to learn more how to take care of my body. I'm just like, oh, all right, well, cool. So she just has those ways. So she's from North Carolina. So Dad is from South Carolina, Mom is from North Carolina. And she is on the Native American side and the African American blend side. And that's the Cherokee, North Carolina Hills Native Americans. And then the story with that blending is very interesting because we know that story. So our great-great-great-grandfather, Papa Knight, right, was escaping slavery and ran into the tribe and sought refuge and met our great-great-great-grandmother, Mama Penina. And that's how the mixing of the two lineages started. And got all the way down to where I am here today. And lineage and history has always been an important part of our family on both sides, especially with, you know, Mom and Dad knowing their history.
This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Malcolm Welfare going through his lineage and knowledge base of his family roots. I watch Ancestry all the time with Mr. Gates.
Yeah,
big show. I find it interesting that more and more people are finding out that there is such a mixing of the indigenous folk of the South and African slaves, because history teaches us a certain thing, right? That we were all, you know, I'm from the Caribbean, so I consider our lineage similar, mm-hmm. that we were all Absolutely. come from slaves, and that our indigenous roots have been wiped out, right. Totally.
Right.
But we're finding out more and more that that's not the case. Mm-hmm. How important is it to have that knowledge base and to know where you're from? Because you can't go where you want to go unless you know where you're from.
And that's the key right there, Juan. Jose, I mean, like, it's important to know where you're going. So having a base gives you that. And I'm actually doing a talk for DCF around colonization and its impacts on Black peoples globally. And one of the things that me and my co-presenter, Dr. Janelle Posey, will be talking about are the impacts of that single narrative and how that kind of realization is starting to inspire people to do things differently in the contemporary. What the purpose of this training from DCF is to do is to try to galvanize Caucasian people to understand that there are many different dimensions of history and historical narrative that need to be understood through our jobs and our interpersonal interactions and our everyday lives. And so that's why they're facilitating this training. So
continue with your childhood. What schools do you go to in the L?
I went to Edgewood Magnet School, K-8. So I was there my whole middle school, elementary school career. And then I went to Notre Dame West Haven. I really wanted to go to the Sound School. But at the time, I had gone through a whole 3-year summer immersion program. So every summer for 3 years, for 3 summers, I went to this program. We learned how to fish. We learned how to build nets. We learned how to build lobster traps. We went on boats. We learned how to row. We learned how to take care of the water and how to run experiments with chemicals to test the water and to see like what kind of oxygen levels there were. And so I was all ready. I was set. I'm like, yes, this is what I want to do. I want to be a marine biologist. And there, I had...
Or crab fisherman.
whichever one, you know, was most exciting at the time. Yeah. I'd always wanted to be a scientist, though. So the science was really, like, grabbing me at that time. And but there weren't any math teachers. There was a math shortage. And so...
It still is.
Yeah.
It still is.
It's kind of crazy how that continues. But my mom and dad were like, yeah, we need to find a solution for you, put you in a place where, you know, you're going to be able to actually learn something. And so they sent me to Notre Dame, and I was like, oh, I didn't want to go. I was like, this is not going to be fun. You know, it was all boys school at the time. And I was just like, oh, I don't want to go there. I was just like, man, I'm not going to have the common experience that some of my other friends are going to have in order to be able to talk about. But it actually worked out. It worked out for the better. I'm also a musician. So being at Notre Dame, I got introduced to musical competitions and the fact that there are these big classical music competitions that happen for both vocalists and instruments. And I didn't know you could go Allstate and, you know, go nationals for music. I didn't know that it exists. So I had a music teacher who pushed me, and I was already performing professionally since I was younger. I started performing professionally when I was 9 years old with the Trinity Choir, Men and Boys, and at Trinity Church on the Green in New Haven. And but the competition piece was a whole new dimension. And when I say competition, it got kind of nasty.
What instrument?
At times. I'm a vocalist.
So a vocalist, okay.
My instrument is a bass voice.
Oh, okay.
So, but I can
tell you want my job. You're coming after my job.
No, not at all. but I'll work with you anytime, though. I went in there, did my thing, and I placed second in the state 1 year. And I just thanked my parents. I was like, thank you, Mom and Dad, for sending me to Notre Dame. Like, I'm really able to do my thing. And, you know, I wasn't a big athlete either at that time. Like, I played tennis and I ran track, but I wasn't, like, part of the football culture. I tried freshman football. I got hit at one time. I was like, no, thanks. I'm good. I'm done. Too rough. I'm good. And I was just like, man, like, I didn't think I was going to fit in there, but. You know, being able to make the music culture kind of like the sports culture and, you know, explain to your sports friends like, yeah, you know, I'm going to competition this week or this weekend, or yeah, we're getting ready for regionals and then Allstate and then all Eastern. And then I went nationals, and then it was a good time. I enjoyed it. Mm. Yeah.
You go to college?
I did. I went to the University of Hartford after leaving Notre Dame, and I went for music performance and music education.
Okay.
So I was at the Hart School of Music at the conservatory there. At the time, they were number three in the country. And so that's what attracted me to UHART. I ended up changing my major to education and ed psych. And I got my psych degree and ended up graduating from UHART. But it was a great time. I ended up pledging Omega Psi Phi at University of Hartford.
Got a Q dog in the house.
Yes, to the room. Root all the bras. And just building that perspective for Connecticut work up there was also interesting too, because it was like, wow, this is not that different than New Haven. This is not that different than some of the things that are happening are not that different than what's happening in New Haven. Of course, I served in leadership capacities on the campus up there too, president of the gospel choir up there, and had a really good time at UHART. We had a lot of parties. We had a lot of events up there that really brought people to the campus. So we had a lot of partnerships as well from a lot of different campuses and a lot of different groups and clubs. So I encourage all of the undergraduate youth out there to get involved with the campus. Do your best to try to get out there outside of just going to class.
But you got to, I want to break it up here.
Yeah.
This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Malcolm Welfare. And we're talking about, but his collegiate career. You did have a sort of a leg up because you had educators as parents that value education that can help you navigate their system.
Absolutely.
They also attended colleges, I'm assuming, and yes. You know, because of their careers. How important is that to have that background and that support to help navigate? You think that it's because it's very difficult to see something and do something without having that example or that guidance and mentoring.
Absolutely. One of the things that I thought of when you said that was conversations with my grandfather, who actually also went to college and pledged my fraternity. So talking to him about joining the fraternity and, you know, experience in joining the fraternity while already being in that undergraduate experience gave me an advantage that, you know, helped other people become Greek as well and helped other people join Black Greek letter organizations. So having that example is critical. Being able to talk to my parents about, you know, the stresses of college and, you know, talking to my dad, you know, I don't think I can do this, you know, I want to leave, people, natural things happening in your life, but also handling your academic life, but being away from home. And talking to my dad about that and sharing that he had a similar experience, but Mr. Barber came back and got him and told him, no, you're not going to leave Southern. You're going to come back. You're going to finish your career. You got too much going for you. You're an All-American athlete and you're not going to quit. And that really inspired me. So to know that you're not alone, to know that you're facing other things that other people have also met, to know that you have solution. It may not be in the same time space, and so things may be a slight difference, but to know that other people have a solution to the issue, that they've come out successful on the other side, also gives you inspiration, even if it is just the example, even if they don't tell you exactly the blueprint. It's critical, man. Like, you got to have those examples. So I want to say to all the educators out there, make sure you share your stories in terms of your struggles and not just the triumph or the profile of what you may look like as a teacher or educator. Share some of the pitfalls so that way the students understand how to get around some of those.
You graduate college and you get a job immediately, or was it a struggle?
I do. I become a paraprofessional in New Haven Public Schools, and I'm working at Wexler Grant School. And I started at King Robinson School. And was there for a few months or a month or two, and then was called to Wexler Grant School to work with a young man who I'm still in contact with. He's about 23 years old now. And but a very special guy in everybody's hearts who meets him. He's a neighborhood favorite, literally. So shout out to my guy, Isaiah Bussey. And he really showed me, how much an educator can learn from a student, in terms of just like trying to figure out new ways to teach him. And so using technology to try to teach him and reach him, and using videos and using popular culture to try to reach him and teach him. And it worked. And working with him is actually what led me to grad school and become a technologist. And at the time the field was very young. It was probably about maybe like 10 years old at the time. And I did not know that there was a such thing as a technologist, let alone a school technologist.
Mm-hmm.
So, learning that things that I was doing with him naturally and just using video examples or multimedia examples to teach him, and that it was a whole field and there was a whole range of sciences about mind sciences, about how to teach people using technology or tech-infused learning was just amazing to me. Being able to practice what I was doing at work with him, because it was already, you know, what we were used to, And then being able to bring it back to the classroom and, you know, do my my capstone project around technology was just amazing. And having that experience as a young educator and young paraprofessional was awesome. So I started grad school at the same time I went to work, and being in schools every day with kids is not only hilarious, but it's again, educational. And it really helped me understand my parents a little bit more too. Why Dad was so funny. And I still see some of those students today. Again, they're grown. I ran into one, actually I was at a local restaurant in Westville recently, and sitting at the bar, and he was at the bar eating, and he was actually talking about Wexler, talking about the school. And then he turns around and he looks, he was like, "Mr. Welfare?" And I was like, "Yeah, man." It was like, so it's a lasting impression, man. And it's something that continues to give back over and over and over. So, work right out of college, even though it was tough at first, it was tough finding and landing in that position, but I'm grateful for it.
As you move on and you started elevating, you graduated from your graduate work. Where was that?
At Drexel University in Philadelphia.
Drexel University in Philadelphia. Yes. Okay. Very good. Congratulations.
Thank you, brother.
But then you come out, and what were your next steps in your journey that you took on? Did you become a teacher eventually?
Eventually I did. The next step I took was to work in the Office of Youth, Family, and Community Engagement at the New Haven Board of Education. It was a newly founded office under Jemma Joseph Lumpkin. And that's where I wrapped up grad school. And some of the things that I was responsible for as a leadership coordinator and working in that position was a portfolio of social justice education, which included social emotional learning and working on the curriculum of social emotional learning with Tiffany Jackson. Working on reclamation and reentry with students. So going out to different facilities, interviewing students, having students come to the Board of Ed, interviewing students and families, talking about their juvenile justice experience, putting together success plans with them and their teachers in order to create homeostasis and to create safe passage for students, so that way students could be understood not only from their conditions and where they were coming from, but just as students, period. So they could reintegrate and really tap into their learning environment. I had discussions and roundtables working with the superintendent on equity, inclusion, and diversity. And, you know, that work was and still is very important. You know, it's super important, especially now in the age of AI and technology, because those protocols create the barriers that keep people from being exploited by the technology.
Mm-hmm.
They protect people. So this work was in the capacity of teaching and learning and making sure that we had equitable classrooms and that we had protocols and that we had understanding across different municipalities so that you know, police understood what students were doing in schools and understood how to have healthy conversations with them in the community policing model that we were running in the city at that time.
And all this work now is coming together, mm-hmm. culminating, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I don't like speaking with smart people because then I got to use bigger words.
Nah.
But it culminates now in this program that you're putting together. A men's conference.
Yes.
Can you tell me, is it November?
November 15th.
November 15th.
Yes, at the Dixwell Q House.
What time does it start?
It starts at 8 o'clock in the morning. We'll be gathering, having a light breakfast, meeting and greeting for a few minutes, but then we're going to jump right into introductions and the conference. And the conference is going to be a powerful collection of people who have done awesome work just like I have throughout their lives in order to become licensed therapists, to become technology practitioners, to become teachers, educators, principals, and administrators. And to bring information to the community like civic engagement information and how they can tap into not only the city side of things, but also just government structures in general. How to tap into their child's school as a man and understand that your role as a man is critical. But all of this is offered to the entire community. It is a men's conference because we are focused on issues that impact men, and we want to make sure that the entire community is able to support and communicate with the men that we all have in our lives. So this conference is offered to everybody. We will have some men's only sessions, but there will be a lot more community-wide open sessions for everybody to enjoy.
Men's conference, November 15th.
Mm-hmm, November 15th, Dixwell Q House, 8 o'clock, and we will be wrapping up around 3:30.
I mean, you got a lot. You're packing in a lot.
Yeah, we are.
From 8 to 3:30.
Yes.
I've seen some of the pictures of your collaborators. I mean, you're bringing together, and this is like, you know, black man run. I mean, it's from the ground up.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Very unique.
Yes, very unique. I want to thank all of the men who gathered in the initial part of the process. So we ran it in a few different phases. My initial vision was to make sure that we understood what the men were thinking and feeling first, mm-hmm. and hear from the men of the community first. But then we had equal time and opened it up to the entire community to voice their opinions and share their views on what they felt the men in their lives needed. And, you know, I really want to shout out the men for understanding the mission and taking the time to understand what it took to put together a conference, what the elements of a conference were, and then discussing what we wanted to see. And men like Buddy mentioned, men like Nathan Joyner, my counterparts in helping me initialize this conference, Alder Frank Douglas and Earl Bloodworth. These are men who have been instrumental in taking the vision and making it real life. So I just wanted to thank them and to shout them out. I also want to thank the Dixwell Q House for making sure that it was open to the community and open to the men who wanted to meet there. We met every week on Thursdays from July until the end of September.
Until like 3 weeks ago.
The last meeting we had was the beginning of August. That's when we had our selection committee meeting where we selected the workshops. We had over 29 applicants, so we had a lot of applicants apply. We still have people asking us if there's room or if there's time to get in. And unfortunately, it is closed for this year, but we want to continue to encourage people to reach out because we want to tap people in for programming that will be continuing throughout the year. Alder Frank Douglas has a men's walk that happens in the spring. And we really just want to have something that is similar to the Women's Summit, where men can gather information about themselves, just like the women can gather information about themselves that is important to them. And that really has a focus on things that impact them. And we want to be able to have a safe place where families can come and gather and learn and talk about issues that impact them, things that might not be talked about otherwise. So we have, I'm going to name drop a little bit. We have some of the workshop presenters like Kevnisha Boyd come in to work with us. We have people like Marquess Sutton come in to work with us and present information from a mental health perspective. We have a few people who are working in the technology space and talking about cybersecurity. And that's Darko, the company Darko. So I just wanted to highlight a few of the people. That's just the tip of the iceberg. We have a whole bunch of other people who will be working with us over 12 sessions to choose from. We have Tracy Joseph bringing a panel. And then we also have Grammy-nominated and nationally known poet Prentice Powell, who will be coming and blessing us with not only a word at the beginning of the conference, so you want to make sure you're there early, but also be doing a workshop. So we have some powerful people coming to bring us information. They're all experts and practitioners in their field, and they are hungry to feed the community. This is a free conference. This is free knowledge. This is free money. You could take this information and turn it into change, dollars, cents, whatever you want it to be. And really make it not only work for your monetary wealth, but also your mental, physical, and spiritual wealth as well. So
I just want to thank you for your time, your dedication, your contribution to society, for being who you are, for sharing your story. I think I got a list.
Yes, sir.
That I can go over, but I'm very grateful for everything. This has been the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Malcolm Welfare and his courageous story in Give Back here in the city of New Haven. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate being here. Is it all right if I tell people where they can find me?
Sure.
All right. I am an education consultant. I specialize in technology implementation. My company is Good to Go Services. You can find me on Instagram and you can find me on Facebook at Good to Go Services LLC. So thank you again, brother, for having me. I appreciate your time.
No, thank you, my friend. And for everybody that's out there listening, I would like to thank you for listening and have a great evening.
Thank you.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month, no commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.